Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 18, Episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2018. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jalak Panther. Courtesy of Cub 1 Fan 3. Pick a number, Cub 1 Fan 3. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
You know what? I'm going to do you one better, and I'm going to raise the stakes here, because Cub 1 Fan 3 also hit me with the AK, and I'm going to go with the Gray Panther, because I'm Miles Gray. Low-hanging fruit, but an appropriate AKA nonetheless. So thank you. You just did the double,
yeah.
Cub 1 Fan 3.
Get another idea, Cub 1 Fan 3. Sorry, I'm being so mean to you. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very funny comedian, Aisling B.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Hello, America. I'm great. It's Valentine's Day. I'm on what can only be described as a date. you might describe as a podcast, but I'm taking what I can get, to be honest, boys. Jackie, keep on mentioning your child, which I think is odd for a date. But I'm having a great day.
That's right. We are recording this extra early so I can get to my son's Valentine's Day party at his preschool. So I appreciate you all being here.
And you really worked hard to get on that guest list, too.
Yes, that was a very tough one.
I thought child marriage was outlawed in America, but it's nice to see it's still going strong.
Yeah, we're still
having their meet and greet.
Still putting it out there. Aisling, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human?
Well, what is interesting is that I delete all my search history on the weekly. Yeah, I have this feeling I'm just very clumsy, and I know I'm like always a day or away or two before someone finds my stuff.
Right.
So I just tend to, rather than be more responsible, just delete my search history in case someone finds it. But my last one from yesterday was unauthorized rock musical of Jurassic Park. And that is an unauthorized musical that my friend is in, and I was looking for tickets last night to get them. And so he's in LA.
That sounds amazing.
There is a Jurassic Park musical?
Well, I'm just interested to know what the authorized Jurassic Park musical is. If this is the unauthorized one, they have to legally say that. So I'll be interested to see what it's like. I'm going next Saturday.
Jurassic Park is a very important film for me.
And it especially lends itself towards singing and dancing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So I'm interested to see how that will be.
And it's 25 years, I think, right? 93 is when it came out?
I have to see this now.
Yeah.
This sounds amazing. Because I'm picturing that there are actors portraying the dinosaurs. What do you think that will be happening? Or
yeah, I'd hope so. I hope
people raptoring around on stage.
Yeah, raptors will rap.
I hope they haven't found some amber and put a needle in through the amber into a mosquito and to recreate that. Because we all saw what happened last time when someone did that for entertainment.
Yeah, that did not go so well.
Yeah,
Muldoon, the hunter guy, will do a number called "Clever Girl."
Yeah.
Clever girl, you tricked me. Maybe we're writing it right now, but
I know.
Just a note for your friend, if he doesn't do that, that's very low-hanging fruit.
What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated? Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have long thought this. I think she does not get what she deserves, and if she's listening to the podcast, which I can only assume she can because she also lives in America, I think that you are an underrated actress and are wonderful and can turn your hand to comedy and drama, Sandra, and let no one tell you any different. And you're kind, and you've aged beautifully without looking like you've gone under the knife. You seem to be lovely off camera as well. Not that I've ever met you, but in sort of backstage hangs. Miss Congeniality, still one of my favourite films. She was being an empowered, funny woman who didn't have to be a mess, was funny on her own terms even back then. She had to act just floating around with George Clooney for ages on her own in a silly spacesuit, which was harder than you think.
Yeah.
In Gravity.
Yeah.
Or lack of gravity, as I called it last.
Hey. I've never heard of her. I'm going to play along with your underrated
thing. Oh, she's an actress.
Yeah.
She's named Sandra
Bullock. Heard of her.
She speaks German, too.
But I will check her out.
Yeah, she's bilingual.
Yeah, she's a really new kid on the block. I'm not surprised you haven't heard of her.
She was in that documentary you love, Jack, called Speed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you remember? Okay.
Yes,
about that terrible bus accident.
That's why I moved to L.A.
Yeah.
Because of that documentary.
Yeah.
L.A. looked like a fun place.
It drew you closer.
What is something
only
you think
takes
is
a train
overrated?
And I feel like, again, this might be controversial because I feel like tomorrow I'll bump into him now or something. Tom Hiddleston. Ooh. That is, yeah. And I just don't get the... Like, he, for me, he, A, I, of course, he's a handsome man, but handsome in the same way all men from the town are. You know, like, yeah, oh, you've got teeth. Biologically, it seems sound. But, like, not like, oh, my days, I'd be late for that. Like, and then...
Oh, my days, I'd be late for that.
And then when he does... Anytime he goes in a chat show, he does his impressions. Or anytime he does in an interview, he does his, like, seven impressions where he's kind of like, I'm Sean Connery, how you doing?
Right.
And all this sort of stuff. And you're like, that's exactly what boring people do on dates.
Right.
You know, when someone goes... You know I can do impressions, and you're like, oh, can you? Brilliant. Oh, who can you do?
Yeah,
like, Jesus, please, you know.
Sounds like you date a lot of actors, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That's the problem. But also, everyone does, like, if you can do Andy Dufresne impression, I don't care, because everyone can do that. That's like, right, being able to kind of breathe or drink
Freeman,
water.
Andy,
yeah,
Dufresne.
Andy Dufresne. I'm like, yeah, everyone can do that. Yeah, it's really good.
It's
brilliant.
I thought that was Morgan in the building.
Right.
It is, or Christopher Walken.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's not,
boy.
Yeah, that's not, you're not clever.
Wow.
So that is my, and did you see him sing Man in the Mirror in somewhere in Asia?
Who, Christopher Walken?
No, not Christopher Walken, Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
My God, do yourselves a favor, or actually maybe ruin your day by watching. He's like, yeah, okay, I suppose I could sing you a song, yeah. And then they start, ah.
Really?
And then he goes, I'm going to make a change. You know,
whoa,
really off. Like,
right,
that sort,
whoa,
of...
But he had
atonal.
The... I'm looking at the man in the mirror. You know, really just slightly off, which is worse than completely off.
Right.
Always, it was real dodgy territory, spicy stuff.
That
so that's my...
Terrible.
But everyone was like, couldn't.
Maybe that Taylor Swift co-sign did it all.
Yeah.
I didn't even understand
that
them as a
couple.
Like,
do
you know what? He doesn't come across as a bad man. It's not about his soul, which I believe is good. It's just the overrated
quality.
Right. Yeah.
If him and Sandra could combine their power and just do their job, I feel like they'd both get what they deserve.
And it made him seem suspicious to me that he dated Taylor Swift, because I think she's like a alien cyborg type thing.
Right.
See, I don't. I think, as she says, she gets all this, oh, Taylor Swift and her exes, but Ed Sheeran just talks us through his day. Every single song. And everyone's like, oh, he's just got so much range in his songs. And it's all like, I walked down the road and I met a girl. Yes, another girl, and it's a different song, but it's the same girl from the other song. And then we had a packet of Doritos. And you're like, oh, God.
Jesus.
But he doesn't get any bad flack.
All right. Well, I now dislike Tom Hiddleston a little bit more and have a greater appreciation for this woman you call Sandra Bullock.
Bullock and
I'll
Swift.
I'll have to check out. All right. We're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about today on Valentine's Day 2018. Mm. And the way we like to open things up is by asking our guest, what is a myth? What is something that you know that people think is true that you know to be false?
Well, this is actually something that is straight off the presses, hot off the pan, just this morning.
As they say.
When I came in and I was talking to Miles about America.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you have an interesting accent. You're not from... California.
Alabama.
Oh, I think I am.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm sorry. I have a really bad ear, so it's hard for me.
You are miles from the truth right now.
Oh, here we go.
My young man. I am actually Irish, yes. And so when one comes to another country, one spots the little intricacies of a place. And we were talking about red cups at parties.
Right.
And I always thought everyone in America drank from red cups at parties. And it's very exciting for foreign people to come here because we see in the movies red cups at parties. And that's how you know you're having a hashtag good time when you have red cups. And you think that actually people don't really drink red cups that much at parties. That it's probably something movie people, like producers, are like, guys, we need everyone to, for continuity reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
Solo cups. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
red
it's
solo
like,
or are they called solo
parties?
Cups?
Well, that's the brand.
Why are
the
called?
It's the cup brand is called Solo.
But it's an odd name because what cups are like conjoined cups?
Right.
I know.
Like
what,
you're like, oh, can I have a cup, but on its own? Could you not give me two cups?
Yeah.
Like, where does the idea of solo cup, it just, it
I,
seems
I wish
like,
we could get to the bottom of it. I don't know. It could have been a very lonely man.
Han.
Oh,
yeah.
Han Solo.
It might be a Han
Solo. He's diversifying.
Right.
That's like saying solo hats. Right. Like, can I just have the one hat for my head? Yeah, I was only going to give you one hat for your head in the first place.
It's like, I'm not one of those fancy city men wearing three hats at once.
Right.
Oh, three hats Johnny. I love that guy.
Three hats.
Man, he's from New York City. Couldn't you tell he got three hats on?
So apparently the rumor overseas is that you go to any party in America and everybody's going to be holding solo cups. Mm-hmm. And the truth, I'd say, in my experience, is that it's more high school and college parties
usually,
sometimes,
yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
I grew up, every high school party I went to was probably solo cups, or any party that has like a keg. Usually you have,
right.
If there's a keg of beer, then you have the res solo cups, or you just have them because you go to Costco or wherever, and they're typically like the most robust sort of heavy duty cup you can use.
Sure.
And pour a large quantity of alcohol in.
Right.
Without going like,
but they're all red as a thing. There's nothing like blue cups.
There are blue ones.
Red.
But for whatever reason, I think, yeah, films have, art directors over many films have just created this
myth. It's just shorthand. It's like, you know, they just have to spend less time thinking about it. It's just like everybody
knows. But it's funny
that
it's become such a myth that if you see like a party in another film from another country, they're probably just drinking out of glasses.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they're civilized.
Yeah, and we're wasteful consumers who are going to destroy the earth.
But
hi, welcome to America.
Also, as you were pointing out, Miles, red cups means you can just have nothing in the cup.
Yeah, if you're shooting a movie, you don't have to be like, hey, does everyone have liquid in their cup? Don't drink it on this take. You just be like, fake sip that empty ass cup.
But that's what's interesting, the myth of it, that it's probably more to do with art department and so many parties are in American movies, like so many teen movies and like frat, that sort of like we don't really have. Of course, we have the college culture of going to parties, but that sort of frat house fraternities doesn't exist in outside of America.
What was your experience like? What kind of cups did you drink out of at parties?
Oh, well, I've actually drank out of numerous different types of cups over the years, guys.
Like actual glasses?
Yeah, I'm going to be like Bubba Gump in
Forrest Gump.
Bubba in Forrest Gump now, where it's like, I drank out of big cups, small cups, plastic cups, glasses.
But is there anything standard?
Wine glasses.
Yep, see, it's an Alabama accent.
There is... like kind of white plastic cups maybe, and they'd be a lot smaller. That sort of big beer cup we wouldn't actually have.
Right.
But I just really like the idea that it's not even just they sell them cheap and everyone has them at parties, that it's, I really like your idea, Miles, that like producers, first of all, it means that everyone can drink, but you never have any drink in it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see for continuity it going up or down. I used to think it was red cups. So then if the police came into the frat party and were like, you're all under 21. Which is strange for an age to start drinking at. Stop drinking. They'd be like, no, my red cup's just full of juice, officer.
Right. Well, you do that just if you're drinking places you're not supposed to, like the beach or whatever. Then you have those
cups.
So they can't immediately say you're drinking. And when they pull up, just slam that shit.
Because
like,
cans, in Ireland, cans is a big thing. Like having a can.
Right. Yeah, that's...
You wouldn't really get a keg. You get a load of cans.
Right.
So the keg idea is quite kind of not... None.
Again, we're excessive, and it's like, well, we could drink 78
or
cans of beer.
Which
but we
one's more wasteful?
Yeah.
One big keg and plastic cups, that is probably wasteful because of the plastic.
Right.
Or a load of cans, you can recycle the cans.
Although I noticed in Ireland when I was there that they pay a lot of attention to the percentage of alcohol in the beer.
And yes.
Like they, so like that's a thing in America
it's
that is
efficient.
Just incidental. But
Bud Light.
In
you,
Ireland,
you get drunk having more water.
In Ireland, they... Like, basically, if it has a higher percentage of alcohol, it'll cost a little bit more because, like, it's more efficient at doing its job. It's, like, a very
Is that not a thing here?
No, it'll cost the same, basically. Like, IPAs will cost the same.
I mean, think about malt liquor is cheaper than most beers if you want it. I mean, which isn't technically a beer, but, yeah.
You're so right, though, because we're like, oh, the value is the alcohol, not the taste.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what's doing the work.
That's what you're paying.
We're all about high volume lifting. Here. High volume.
All right. Because it's Valentine's Day, we wanted to talk real briefly about romantic comedies, just about our love lives.
Yeah.
And just, Miles, what's your favorite thing to do with a lady?
Man, you know, you're just kissing on your lady because you have a real life girlfriend and she's like, I love
you. Somebody knows the lingo.
Oh, and, that's the best.
She's like, looks in your eyes and is like, I am your girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
That's tight.
Yeah, no, all very believable stuff. So,
you know what you're
doing. Instead of doing that, we wanted to talk about romantic comedies. We wanted to name some of our favorites or our favorite and maybe least favorite rom-com tropes.
Favorite rom-com, go, Jack.
Pride Notting Hill or Something About Mary, if you let me, if you allow it. Which it's not really a romantic comedy.
It's romantic.
It is.
And it's a full-blown comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's about a guy getting a girl.
Yeah.
And it's called There's Something About Mary.
Yeah. So
it's
there.
Absolutely there a romantic comedy. There, just because there's jizz in it, it doesn't mean there's...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and I've been saying that the whole time, Jack.
So that's my favorite, least favorite, Love Actually, even though it's by the same guy who did Notting Hill. Not a big fan of Love Actually.
Aisling, what's your pick?
What is my pick? What is my pick? Oh, I love, I'm not sure if you guys ever got it here. There's an old Pride and Prejudice, not the Keira Knightley one. There's another one. It was the original one. Colin Firth became famous for, and in it there's a famous scene where he gets out of a lake and is like, oh, grumpily shakes some water off of himself. And I always like that one because afterwards you can't help but start speaking exactly like this the whole time. It's very hard not to start speaking in an English accent, and it's all about manners and the sort of like looking at someone across the crowded dance hall, but the dancing is really unenergetic and sexy. It's just walking up, shaking your shoulders, walking back. And it's just that sort of like back in the day dancing. And but it's all eyes and Mr. Darcy, do you think that for £3 a year, I'm going to marry someone like, it's that sort of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really like that sort of old, they're doing a lot with just their eyes and a few manners, which I think it's very interesting. And you still get as much frisson from it.
Miles?
Oh, I think One Fine Day.
What's One Fine Day again?
One Fine Day is with Michelle Pfeiffer and George Clooney, where they're, you know, just single parents trying to take their kids to daycare, but they're also balancing their careers at the same time. I don't know why.
How do they do it?
I don't know. It could be nostalgia. It was like one of the first dates I went on, like in sixth grade. Like I took my sixth grade girlfriend to see it, and I felt like an adult. I was like, this is One Fine Day. And it also made me think New York was the coolest place ever.
What is sixth grade age-wise? What roughly what's that?
12 years old.
12? You brought a girl to the cinema?
Yes.
Miles, you little legend.
Bought her a Diet Coke and everything.
Oh my God, that's fairly advanced.
Yeah. You know, I took an eighth grader once when I was sixth grade to see Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Oh my God, that's full on.
So, you know, I'm out here.
Yeah.
Yes, as they would say.
That's too advanced. That's almost child services.
Yeah. I'm a little suspicious of you.
Well, you know, some say I was the original pickup artist. You know.
Yeah. Who was that some who would say?
Mostly me in a sort of drug-addled, like drug-induced psychosis. But yes,
right.
That is me.
When Harry Met Sally, can I throw that into the mix?
Yes.
Yeah. Also think that's
trope-wise, though, it always starts off with some level of deception. Like,
right.
I'm an undercover journalist, or like, I'm not a shit bag, or whatever. And then they're like, wait, I'm in too deep.
Isn't
we're like
how
in love.
All relationships start with
I guess true. Yeah.
I'm not a shit bag.
That is true. Right? Because at the beginning, you're like, nah, man, well, like, I'm really on top of my shit.
Just in general, I think the most misleading, it's necessary for the purposes of all romantic comedies, but the most misleading trope in romantic comedies is that dating is like really hard and like,
right.
Because dating is the easy part if you're like in a relationship with somebody who's like the one, whereas like, you know, a successful relationship years down the road is difficult. Mm. But like dating is, they have to like throw all these obstacles in the way of like people who are in love with each other, like, you know, a bet. Or, you know, one of them being an undercover journalist who is right. just doing research on them. Or my other least favorite trope is that rape is a funny prank, like in Revenge of the Nerds and Wedding Crashers.
I don't remember the bit in Wedding Crashers.
Well, you're talking about when he ties him up?
Yeah, he ties him up and like it is...
Has like he's like kissing on Vince Vaughn, like the brother.
Right.
I don't remember that bit. Isn't that though, there's loads of, well, this is what happens with the Me Too campaign. You go, no, it never happened to me. Oh no, it has 18 times. I just forgot.
That's right.
That you just sort of tend to go, it's so expected, this stuff that you've,
yeah, at the time it was like, whoa, isn't it funny that a dude like tied up another dude and like forced himself on it? Whoa.
Right.
Gay people. Like, like was sort of like the vehicle that powered that joke.
And you sort of don't notice it because you're like, oh yeah, this is awful.
Isn't it? But the brother is involved at first, maybe? I don't know.
God.
I forget exactly how it happens. Revenge of the Nerds, which is like this beloved 80s movie that people have nostalgia for, the main character like misleads a woman into thinking that he's her boyfriend and performs oral sex on her.
And, oh my God.
And that's like a gas. Wow. That's like seeing.
And even the fact that it's called Revenge of the, of Nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like revenge of any group of people on women is not great. Mm-hmm. When you start looking at all these little things, you're like, oh God, we got a lot of work to do, guys.
Mm. Well, we're still kind of there because we're living in revenge of the anti-feminist internet user.
Maybe. Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same shit.
That's what I mean. It's almost like that's gone, like, that's gone darker now. It's gone. Wow.
It has.
Yeah.
All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Guys.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Thanks, guys. What a weird date I'm on.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. And so I don't know if you guys watched the Olympics last night.
Yeah.
I did my homework. I tuned in because I wanted to see Michaela Schifrin. She's this U.S. athlete who, you know, very young and has like won gold in slalom last time.
What's her sport?
Slalom skiing.
Slalom.
So she like does, you know, the cutting back and forth.
Oh, yes.
And she's supposedly great. The New Yorker did a profile of her that was like pretty interesting and like makes her seem like this like weird sports cyborg who she like still rooms with her mom when she's on the road. Like she's like totally kind of socially
has a singular focus.
Yeah, just
like
so singularly focused
right.
that it's almost like she's not a full person.
Also, and, she's only 17. I know Miles was out dating from 12.
Yeah,
but like,
I think she's 22 at this point.
Oh, okay.
Michaela Schifrin. She was, I think, 18 when she won the gold 4 years ago. But I just did that math in my head. But anyways, people keep getting delayed. Because there's like such strong winds. We talked about that before. Like they're going to blow the people off the side of the mountain, which wouldn't be good. So, that got delayed and I ended up watching a lot of curling, which is a great sport that I still don't know the rules of, but, it's a lot of fun to watch. So before we get into, the main event last night, Shaun White winning the gold and, the fallout from that, we wanted to talk about a hot take from the Barstool Sports guys, yesterday, responding to the previous night's, big event, Chloe Kim winning gold. This guy had an interesting take, right, Miles?
So the show is called Dialed In with Dallas Braden. So you can imagine this is a safe space.
Mm.
So anyway, this is them just chatting shit about Chloe Kim and just their thoughts on the 17-year-old snowboarder.
I'm inspired by it. Yeah, Chloe Kim, famous for riding a very different board than Kim Kardashian.
No doubt. And in fact, just to keep it on that tip, her 18th birthday is April 23rd, and the countdown is on, baby, because I got my Wooderson going. That's what I like about them high school girls. Man, she's fun as...
I love it, Pecan. I'm right there with you.
She's fine as hell. If she was 18, you wouldn't be ashamed to say that she's a little hot piece of ass.
She's cute.
And she is.
Oh, God.
Hey.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Brody Stevens is like, did you just take a boner pill, Pecan?
A boner pill, Pecan? Pecan, I'm right there with you, dude. Keep it on that tip.
Jesus.
That is a show called Toxic Masculinity.
That's the real life version.
Yeah. That's the real
life. Yeah. So I guess that guy had to kind of walk his things back. You could hear the actual host be like, all right, that's it. And he was sort of just trying to be like, bro, don't do this on my show.
Right. So that guy, Deadspin wrote an article about that little segment, and he responded on Twitter, Deadspin's still a thing? And then 13 hours later was like, I deeply regret my comments about Chloe Kim. Chloe, you are an inspiration, and completely walked it back.
Off.
But I went to his blog, and he is just so consistent in his voice that I just want to read a small part of his blog. So he's talking about how he lives in Georgetown, apparently, and he grew up close by, and his dad has just asked him, how has the neighborhood changed? And he says, I thought about it, and I told him, yeah, she's good.
The neighborhood?
Yeah, the neighborhood.
Cool.
Good. Funny, because if you read all the fancy editorials in the New York Times and watch cable news shows, you'd think Henny Penny, a.k.a. Chicken Little, had taken out a 35-year mortgage on a sweet pad at the corner of Prospect and 31st. So, yeah, DJT, kicks it at 1600 Pennsylvania, and he's a weird mofo, but I haven't heard one citizen of the district express fear or share apocalyptic testimony. Yeah, I just love Don. Oh, yeah. DJT kicks it at 1600, and he's a weird mofo.
Yeah, you mean Donald Trump is the fucking president who's a racist, bigot, right. Sex offender.
Yeah, whatever. He's a weird mofo, bro.
You know, I'm not really good at calling out other men, so let's just leave it at weird mofo, bro.
But you know what? What's good about these situations is that is not some weird one-off little piece of language. And in the current time, if what we do is pick up on these things, don't hang him out to dry and ruin his life, but in those little moments go, do you know what? Yeah, stop, take an opportunity to learn. Hopefully other people will learn, and now let's move on from this one.
Mm.
You know, like that's another tiny microaggression.
Right.
That's just, but actually we need to cauterize these situations as they come along, because that's how the world is going to change,
yeah.
I think, is with each of those situations. But those things don't make me, I almost feel tired when I hear those things.
Yeah.
The reason being, that's all the time, every day. So for a lot of men hearing these things, you're like, what? How could you say that? But you're like, that's walking down the road.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad someone said it out loud and has been lambasted for it, because now then other people might go, oh, better not say that, or better try and watch my language when I'm talking about a sports person who's a kid.
Right.
Like who's a young kid in a skirt.
It's like an inspiration.
Or in tight clothes.
Yeah.
Like just, it's bordering on pedophilic. And it's like those things are so, like we were talking earlier on about just not seeing stuff. You just get so tight. You just literally forget all of those things that happen during the day, but it builds up like sort of like if you don't wash your hair for a week, that's
right.
What it feels like every day with like that sort of stuff happening. You're like, God, my hair is so greasy from greasy comments, but you sort of don't notice it's slowly getting dirty. And
yeah.
Then you're like, ugh, I need a wash.
I guess I'm not super surprised by this comment, just because I guess like 10 years ago, wasn't the Olsen twins turning 18 like
and Britney
openly
Spears,
yeah, celebrated?
It was like a,
yeah.
Clock,
like
a thing.
And before
on
it wasn't like,
radio.
Yeah, it wasn't like
a big
whoa.
Deal.
Yeah. And that's, well, because that's, yeah. I think that's where we're at now is like where, you know, everyone has to act as a collective correcting mechanism.
Yeah. And just be
like, no.
But also, it's about culture makes things sexy or not sexy.
Right.
So you see that happening with when it used to be voluptuous figures, and during the 90s, the sexy gamine look was a figures because that was what we put out on magazines, and that's what every, like, you become sexualized by what you see. So my friend actually, Sarah Pascoe, has a bit of stand up about how you can make people sexually attracted to a boot if you constantly show pictures of boots between porn. And every time you see a boot, it's like, oh yeah, that's a boot.
Pavlovian.
Exactly. We're more Pavlovian than we think. And so if we constantly sexualize children and high school kids and
right.
that sort of idea, rather than say women, sexy women, the idea of a full-bodied grown-ass woman being sexual, rather than kind of trying to make everyone look young and like babies, like even a lot of the models we see on TV and in magazines, they look like babies. And then eventually you think babies are sexy.
Right.
Like that's kind of what we're doing. And so what we have to also do is take responsibility for our advertising, what we buy, what we sell, who we put on.
Yeah, and even shows like Riverdale that are sort of like glorifying relationships of teachers and students. Like, when did we start actually focusing on that too?
But also the casting of people, like say Kate, what's her name? Tom Cruise of the Alien Scientology movement. Katie Holmes. She was one of the youngest cast members of Dawson's Creek and everyone else was 52. But like, it was actually really important to have 52-year-old experienced actors being teenagers because we just need to see the story. We don't actually need people to be 11 in the show. And now you see actors getting younger and younger in a lot of those teen dramas and they're being cast at 14. And you're like, yeah, so you're putting teenagers with sexual stories, but also using actors who sort of don't know their own sexuality yet in these shows. And it's constantly sexualizing children when you're like, we just need to know the story.
Yeah,
it can be played by 22-year-olds.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know?
So I guess we could view this as progress, though.
Yeah, well, I think you have to.
Right.
I think you have to see all of these moments as, because it's not moving backwards, because that would be absolutely naive.
That would be
because
encouraging that's exactly, it and being like, yo, did you check out what he said?
No. What I mean is, that would be saying, this is already there. This is not something coming out. This was probably being said 4 months ago on radio and people would have laughed.
400 years ago.
But 4 months ago, but before the Me Too campaign, we're probably only being woke to it
right,
now and
right,
going,
right.
oh, we should actually say something now where this person can lose their job for their words.
Yeah, totally.
So this is very, it's new that we are caring much.
Yeah.
It's brand new. It's fresh out of the box in the last couple of months that we're caring.
Yeah.
So it is progress that we go, yes, apologize. Now let's move on and focus on the sport. That is actually a little moment of progress in a tiny way.
Yeah.
So let's look at the positives of it in a sense.
I agree.
Because otherwise you'd sort of go, So it's good to maybe see a positive coming out of it. Yeah. Yes, apologize, sir. Now watch your language and teach other men.
Maybe the most surprising thing, this happened on a Sirius XM show. I didn't know people listened to Sirius XM.
Who does? I thought those are people who get scammed.
That's the biggest surprise.
You get scammed at the car lot when they're like, hey, we can throw in the Sirius XM too. And you're like, sure. Everybody listens to fucking like Bluetooth over their cell phone now, so there's no need.
All right. So last night, the big winner and the big story was Shaun White winning the USA's 100th all-time Winter Olympic gold medal. The NBC commentator said, "White is the new gold." As his score was broadcast.
NBC, I was like, keep coming with those hits, baby.
Yeah, you win.
I feel bad because I probably make that joke myself. I'm like, you know, I was not a bad title.
Do you believe in miracles? And white is the new gold.
White is the new gold.
The two most iconic calls ever. But this has kind of brought attention to the fact that NBC and other outlets have been kind of ignoring the fact that Shaun White was involved in a sexual harassment lawsuit a couple years back and settled out of court last year in 2017. And some outlets are publishing some of the details of that. And I don't know, it's pretty gross, like his relationship with this woman who he settled out of court with.
He has a drummer in his band.
Right. So
called Bad Things.
First of all, he has a band.
Yeah. Every hallmark of a bored rich dude.
Right. And the like documents detail this relationship where he kind of oscillates back and forth between treating her like, you know, his little brother. And, you know, it reminded me of being, I didn't have brothers growing up, but I had, you know, cousins, and I'd go to like basketball camp and room with older kids, and they would, you know, put their butt in my face and fart and, you know, cup their balls
like
and put their hands in my face and be like, yo, smell that, bro. And that, and it was fun. I loved it. No, but that's the sort of shit that like young adolescent men do to each other. And that's what he like does to her in a lot of these scenes from their relationship, sending her gross porn and like making her look at gross stuff, which is, you know, really unprofessional. And
the point is, though, is asking someone to stop. I think that's what it is, because I work in comedy. I'm a stand-up comedian. I mostly work with men. It's a male-dominated industry. And you work out your line. It's the point isn't the point is often about not listening to stop. And that's with everything, you know, because it's so hard when you're working out. Do you want to kiss someone? Are you having a good time? And you're like, yeah. And then if someone goes stop, then you go, okay, I'm hearing stop with anything.
Yeah.
With, for example, if I kept on joking with you, Miles, about going on a date as a 12-year-old, and eventually you'd be like, do you know what, Ashlyn, stop. I'd be like, oh, okay, I've taken the joke too far. I thought we were having a good time.
We've reached the limit.
Yeah, exactly. Or you might keep laughing and we might actually have a good time with it and reach a funnier joke. And that's how sometimes you find great fun or great jokes or great laughter or whatever it is. And the point of everything is when, at what point someone said stop and you just refuse to listen, because then it turns into harassment.
Right.
So, for example, I have loads of friends who I make lots of sexual jokes with, who I have a very flirty, silly, stupid relationship with, women, men, gay men, gay women. And like, it's such a lovely way to joke. I grew up in a family who love euphemisms. Well, they don't. My mother doesn't really know what euphemisms are. She just kind of puts an energy into her voice, like, oh, I'll sit down on that chair. All right. That's not a euphemism. But, you know, to find sexual humor can be really very funny. It's maybe physically if someone says stop to you or can you leave me alone, or also just looking out for the cues. It's so important. The whole point of being a professional comedian is looking for the cues from the audience that they're on board or you're going in the right direction.
Right.
And again,
right.
if that's something you could learn from that. Now, what I would say about this case is two things. First of all, it was settled out of court. So if it's settled, at a certain point you go, well, at what point in the, yes, that's part of what he's done, but it was settled out of court. The details are out there. If she's not coming out saying, well, he still never learned.
Right.
Then, and it's unfortunate that he had to go to court for it. But also that's the justice system. Like, he has been punished, or whatever's happened has happened. And that was how many years ago? So you would hope that the whole point of jail or someone going to court about anything is that they will learn and not do it again.
Right.
Especially with something like this, when it's something more serious, of course you start when if it's rape or murder, you go, that sort of shit doesn't really wash away. That's right. Not something you learn from. Go, sorry, I won't do it again. You know, there.
Right.
But you do have to sort of, in some way, put a bit of faith in the justice system that you should be allowed to move on. If you got drunk driving when you were 21. And then people are like, oh, he's doing that podcast, but he was actually done for drink driving. You'd be like, God, that was, I'm so sorry about that, but I did do my time or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. The other thing on the flip side of that is it does make me realize that there's never been a code of conduct with talent. So with sports or acting or singing, anything that's sort of magical to most people, where you have to have an innate sort of magical talent, which is the same with performing. There's never been, but to do that, you also need to be kind, turn up to work on time. You know, you can, if you're a great sports person, you can be like, well, I wasn't there for training, but I'm still going to do it. Or like, whether it's football, it doesn't matter how you behave outside of the pitch, as long as you're a really good football player. It doesn't matter how you behave in your trailer, as long as you're a magical actor, or whether you beat your wife or whatever it is. Or whether you're a sexual predator, it doesn't matter, as long as you're really funny and on stage, people still want to come and see your shows. And maybe we're at the shifting point now where there has to start to be a code of conduct.
Yeah, right.
That if you're not kind to your co-workers or nice, or you shout at people behind stage, that doesn't make you able to do your job. That doesn't make you the at what point I think we allow a lot for creativity and talent. Like, maybe they needed to do that to be able to do your job. And from now on, maybe there's starting to be a code of conduct. If you're a sports person, an actor, a comedian, you don't just get to be magical. You also have to go to work and be kind, like everyone else has to as well in a normal office.
And I mean, this is behavior that we saw from Peyton Manning in the locker room, sort of this like shitty behavior where he's, it's just clear that he never advanced beyond being a 12-year-old boy. And but then Shaun White,
that has to be nipped in the bud a lot earlier though as well, you know?
But so he combined that with groping her and trying to kiss her at a party while drunk. And there's also this quote from, they quote a text conversation that they had that was basically their last text conversation. And the way he treats her is like weird and kind of psychologically fucked up, where he's like, you know, she's the drummer in their band. And he's like, I want your hair to be cut short, but with your bangs long by tomorrow. And she's like, I really would rather not. Can we talk about this? And he's like, no, that's my final decision. That's what I want your hair to look like. And she's like, I'd rather not. And he's like, is that your final decision? So that's what you're telling me. You're telling me you're not going to do it. And then, like, he fired her from the band.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. It's just like, it's not criminal behavior, but it...
it's bullying.
It's bullying. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's true what you're saying, Ashley. It's sort of like, we have a culture here of when you're the talent, you're deified. And it's like, well, that's that they're going to do what they do. Like, they're going to do drugs in the studio, or they're going to break rules and we can't say anything because they're the talent. And I think, it's also a reckoning in general for people to sort of reevaluate. Like, you may be Shaun White and you may be in a band, but this is an employee at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And that's where this isn't your garage band you started with your mates, like when you were 12 years old and dating all the time, you know, that where you have this banter already, and it's a different relationship than one of someone who holds your sort of financial well-being.
Like,
in their
look
hand.
How wonderful Bill Cosby is, but I know he like really likes having young girls backstage. Look how wonderful Louis C.K. is, but you know what? He's a bit creepy, but God, he brings the punters in. There are people just as good who you can foster and go, but they're also kind. So let's drop the people who aren't kind. And I know that might seem a bit airy-fairy, but just in terms of a code of conduct, if someone can still do the job as well and start to bring in as much money, the employers have to enforce it. The fans and people who pay the wages, because we go and we watch these people, we give over our money to Netflix or whatever, and we add ratings to whatever show we like, we have to be careful with where we put our cash, because that's where our power is.
Yeah,
so if a company is bad, give your money to another company, because that is how they hear. That is how companies enforce code of ethics. For example, people boycotting Miramax films, for example, that makes people take women seriously. It's not really feeling sorry for women. It's that you go, oh, there's a financial risk to this, that our movies, people will stop watching our movies and everything. Like, it isn't really out of a true, it's not purely altruistic
right.
for the cause.
Right.
And that's not the worst thing in the world, because it means we as consumers have a power with who we decide we want to buy our sports drinks from.
Right.
If someone's attached to a Subway sandwich, so to speak, not that physically attached to it, but the brand of Subway sandwiches, don't buy them if you don't like that athlete or what it is. Like, you can use your money in quite a positive way if you feel a little lost to do.
I've always felt like the Subway brand is beyond reproach and all of their spokespeople are, perfect.
That was a really odd example for me as well, because I've never eaten a Subway sandwich, but it just, do you know what I was thinking as well? The sports person I was thinking of, Happy Gilmore, when he had to do the sandwich.
When he
remember?
hits the Subway.
Into a guy's mouth. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only sports person in America.
I think we're seeing this specifically, you were mentioning Weinstein. I mean, with the Weinstein company, the district attorney in New York ignored the shit out of all this evidence or circumstantial evidence for many years, and now that journalists have actually
it doesn't work to their favor, it will cost them more to ignore and not
right
do
exactly
something.
So now they're bringing a case against the Weinstein company for enabling him.
No one will, for example, recycle if it doesn't make more financial sense to recycle. For example, if recycling is cheaper than the normal trash collection, so in the UK or in Ireland, for example, you have to pay more money to recycle general household waste, to put those trash cans out, than you do for your recycling bins.
Right.
So it pays. And you're like, no, we should really just do it because we should. And you're like, no, people are incentivized financially generally.
Totally.
And so we as a consumers have to show companies in our own little tiny ways, and it's all through micro changes that we make, that it pays to be ethically good in business. So whether that's with the movies you watch, or when a lot of companies are now giving, say, 50 cent off if you bring your own cup in to use your coffee, and then more people go to those coffee shops. Like, that's how you show companies that the policies of being good or being ethical do pay off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It'll be tough because some of these companies are just so large that...
Yeah, but people are so large. People move like bees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, look at the Me Too campaign. It started off as one little hashtag on Twitter, and then it brought in people not just from the entertainment industry. And I'm not being naive to say everything's fixed or everything's good, or, you know, it's only been a couple of months. But look at the movement that has created from just a little hashtag on Twitter.
Totally.
People are very effective at change. We're bees and we move together as a group, and, you know, something that happens hits, like this is called the Daily Zeitgeist. The zeitgeist can hit across the world very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, like the Doritos campaign, women go, I'm not going to put up with that. Thank you very much.
Right.
Like, that was just so quick, because people move in community. So we can do it by just little changes.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And Miles, there's a story about the mobile phone number market in Iraq.
Yes, this caught my eye. So the Washington Post did a story about how basically SIM cards with really memorable phone numbers, like ones that have repeated digits and things like that, are highly sought after. So people in Iraq.
Wow.
So I called it Iraq.
Iraq. yes. I call it Iraq.
I over-enunciated.
Well, I'm ignorant. So the deal is there. Since 2007, this market sort of emerged because after all the sanctions that Iraq was hit with during the reign of Saddam Hussein, it kept a lot of consumer goods and consumer electronics out of the country. So in 2007, as the country started opening up, mobile phones became like the hottest item.
Mm-hmm.
And your phone number was like a real sign of prestige. So people like have someone that's like 777-7777. That's like a $20,000 number.
Right.
And so there are businesses where brokers have SIM cards already. Like, they'll put an ad out, like they'll put their menu basically of numbers they have you can buy, and they can range from, you know, $10 to upwards of tens of thousands.
$10 must be like 8 1 3 4.
Yeah.
X,
and
then, Z,
just random.
J, L, X.
With a 5-5. And so
capital J.
They talk about how there in the article, there's one guy who was considering getting a new phone number because he thought it was affecting his ability to attract a mate. One of the brokers traded him a $60,000 Lexus for a SIM card with a certain number on it. It's really interesting read. But by the end of it, like, one of the main stories is there's this TV producer in the country who wants this one number because it has like the most consecutive zeros at the end of it. And so he goes to the broker and says, I want this number. The broker finds the owner of that number. And so the TV executive is willing to pay $120,000 for this SIM card, for this phone number. And so the broker finds the guy. The guy is a police officer, just a regular, like, local, like, works at the municipality. He comes up and says, yo, this guy is willing to pay you $120K straight up for the SIM card right now. What's good? And he says, absolutely not.
Way too low.
Way too low. And he's like, and it just shows you some of these things to even
I'm just wondering,
a life-changing amount of money. He's like, no, I'm not coming up off this phone number.
Like with the red cups in America, is it a cultural thing that no one has business cards or you can't print business cards? So remembering numbers is like a really important thing.
It's really confusing
because you know back in the
mobile phones, like you don't need to memorize people's numbers. Like I have no idea what anybody except my own and my wife's phone number is because I've never had to memorize numbers since I was like 10 years old.
I still know my first one, 085-714-5069.
Wow. Yep. That's pretty good.
My house phone, 045-21076. You've no way of
actually. I have so I still many. Remember mine from when I was a kid, but yeah.
I know Chris Flick's number. I know Ian McMahon's number. I know Megan Hundy's number. I know Kristen Agusa's number. I know Jessica Mundy's number. I know everybody's number from up until about 2002.
Yeah, right,
and then
exactly. Nothing.
Yo, yeah. It was gone.
I was
gone.
Listening
we stopped using
to
our brains.
This wonderful book. I was listening to a book. What? How can that be possible? Audiobooks, folks.
Reading with
Join
your
the revelation.
Ears.
Reading with my ears. And it's Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of it is about, you know, why certain people do well. And we all, especially in America, that one of the big things that you guys have here is like, I came here with nothing. My family came here with nothing. I had nothing. Zero. Right. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. And I'm still managed to succeed. And actually, no one comes here with nothing.
Yeah, right.
You even if it's just the idea that you came from a family that would be courageous enough to brave the seas to land here, that's still coming with an energy of entrepreneurship or whatever it is. But one of the things he was saying is that, you know, there's that whole thing about Asian people being very good at maths. But in our ears, the amount of numbers we can retain at any one time when we look at something is sort of 4 to 5 numbers. But a lot of it is to do with
syllables.
Syllables.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 takes a lot longer to say in English than it does in, say, for example, Chinese.
Ichi ni san shi go.
And so you
that
can actually fit maybe.
That's 1, 2, 3, 5.
But you can maybe fit 2 more numbers in there to memorize because there's just quicker.
Oh yeah, well even in Japanese you can even break it down. I'm half Japanese.
Yeah.
So you can say for ichi, which is 1, you could say e, and like you can remember a number like if it's like 1, 5, 3, you could say you can basically use the first syllable or derivations of that. So san could be sa, and you can kind of create words out of it.
Yeah.
So there's a way to sort of
memorize more numbers quickly. So again, what you're bringing to the table is it's just easier to memorize more numbers. So from a very young age, you're taking in numbers more quickly, which is just sort of like really fascinating to me that we can do that. Because with now we don't have to memorize any numbers at all, because like you're saying with telephone numbers, we don't.
Right.
But I just love that idea that like so many things can come into play with memory. But in numerology is big in China as well. In Iraq, I don't think numerology is a big thing.
No,
so I wonder
really,
why.
For them, it's purely just because that was the first way. Since mobile phones were a really big sort of lifestyle item, that the next way to differentiate yourself was with the number itself. And if that was stylized, then that added a little.
I have to say, when I got my American number here and I went to AT&T, I went in and she's like, now we have numbers available from like Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And I just like the idea that when I rang my mother for my American number, it would come up as from Beverly Hills.
Right.
So I kind of said, and it was just a total status thing.
Yeah,
so maybe I'm as bad.
Is it a 424 number?
Yes, it is.
See, local LA people will be like, you're new.
Yeah.
You got that expansion area code. You're like, you don't have that legacy 310. You don't have that 213.
But it's just interesting because mobile phones are like the first technology that enters like these countries. Like in Africa, for instance, has had this really advanced like mobile phone payment system called M-Pesa, which is just like M for mobile and Pesa is Swahili for money, since 2007. America's just getting Venmo. They've been Venmoing each other like on mobile phones, and like that's been their primary form of payment since 2007. This M-Pesa thing is like spread to other countries, and they're like way ahead of the rest of the world because mobile phones were like the first technology to come in, and they came in before credit cards even. So that's like they had this really advanced mobile phone payment system. And it's just interesting, like Iraq having like these numbers be really important. It's just like hitting them at a certain time when, for whatever reason, like that's what.
Well, in the, the article, they say the toppling of Hussein also shattered the tight political and business class that had surrounded him, creating opportunities for savvy entrepreneurs and ambitious would-be power brokers. So to project status and sophistication, they needed the right tools. An impressive phone number became indispensable.
It's so funny, though, because I don't I understand a phone being a status symbol or a car when you can show it outwardly. It's just, again, numerology I don't think is important in Iraq. And I don't understand how you show your number is really, you never say your number out loud anymore unless you're saying put this into your phone, and then you never say it again.
Right. But I think so that's the thing is like, so even when you dictate it, someone goes, oh shit, you a 130000 type guy?
Ooh.
My number is 000000000.
What are you, Warren Buffett over here?
Yeah, you will make a good husband.
Right. And then
it's fascinating.
Just real quick before we go, we wanted to talk about, so yesterday, I guess, Kirsten Gillibrand announced that she would not be taking any PAC money.
Corporate PAC money, yeah.
Corporate PAC money, right. And then hours later, Cory Booker was like, yeah, me too. And it's and apparently Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
They've all been doing it for a while.
They've all been doing it. So it's very clear, like, we now know who's going to run for president.
Yeah.
Well, I am ignorant of this story. Could you explain it a bit more to me?
So, like, you know, the corporate PACs, that there are ways for corporations to put large sums of money into these groups and funnel them into campaigns versus like individual donors. The Senate, they don't rely as much on corporate PACs as much as House candidates do. But essentially, it's a way for them to say, I'm not going to accept AT&T's money. Or I'm not going to I'll accept the head of AT&T's money, but I will not be getting specifically traceable
from
back.
The company. I will be taking Greg,
and trade groups
who
put them
up
together. So like if it's the American Medical Association, they have a PAC that they give money to and things like that. So by them doing that, it's a way for them to distance themselves by saying, look, finance laws here are completely fucked and they've completely destroyed our political system. So this is their way of saying I'm above the fray. I'm not going to do that. And look at me. I'm woke. So it's, it was interesting because. Yeah, literally hours after Kirsten Gillibrand said she's not doing, Cory Booker's like, oh, me too. I'm not going to take it either. So we're starting to see that.
Where were they not going to take money from?
From corporate PACs.
From corporate PACs.
Yeah, so to say that I'm not sullied by corporations. I'm a pure politician who's
like
here.
Like another Bernie
interest,
Sanders sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. And Bernie has been doing that for a while. Elizabeth Warren has been doing that for a while. Martha Campbell's been doing that for a while. But it's starting to see, like, because Gillibrand and Booker and Warren, they're all looking like sort of potential candidates for 2020. So it's interesting to see people sort of like fall in line.
But then again, like if do we mind if all of a sudden it looks like it pays to be good? It'll
absolutely benefit you to be good.
I have no problem with it.
I think it's great. It's just funny that like within hours, it just sort of shows. Like,
we're starting to see people's
motivations. Like,
right.
Yes.
You want to make sure you're on board.
Getting a little presidential in advance.
Right. They're getting in that racing stance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, see, I'm not sullied. Although, you know, over the years, he's taken plenty of money. But you have to in this game. Look, there's no way to win without fucking taking this money.
Whoever it ends up being, I hope they go back to taking corporate money once they're in the general election. They can be all woke and shit when they're going against each other. But
you're just worried. Please don't get blown out in an ad spend war with the Trump campaign.
Right, exactly. Aisling, it has been a blast having you.
I have enjoyed my date profusely, and I don't know which of one of you I'm going to pick.
Well, you're paying either way for both of us.
Thank you. Yes, I understand that. Altoids for everyone for dinner. Where
can people find you and follow you?
Where can people find me and follow me? That's a really, again, 4 months ago, that would have been fine. Now it's so creepy.
I apologize.
Please don't
really
find and follow
show
me.
Myself out.
Please don't. I've given you a lot of my numbers, my old Irish house phone number and the start of my USL. So I feel like you've got a lot to go on there, guys, to start sniffing around. What am I doing? Oh, a drama I'm in the UK called Hard Sun, which is by the guy, Neil Cross, who created Luther. That will be out on Hulu over here on March the 7th. And the whole series drops. Do we say drops?
Yeah, we
do.
It drops on March the 7th on Hulu. So that'll be the next thing maybe that I...
Oh, awesome. What about the social medias?
Oh, social medias are big now. My Instagram and Twitter is WeMissB. That's WeMissBea.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Miles.
Oh, me? Oh, y'all don't care about me, little old me.
But if you really do,
follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We are at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. Just search Daily Zeitgeist. We have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the sources that we used for the articles and stuff that we talked about today. That is going to do it for today. Miles, is there anything that you would like us to write out on?
I'm just feeling real, you know, it's a romantic day, romantic night. So play
listen
this.
Listen to this voice.
Yeah, you know, you tune into the smooth sounds of Miles Gray. And we got a remix of a Serge Gainsbourg track, the Ballad du Melody Nelson, which is a remix by Howie B. And, you know, it's just got that little vibe. It's a remix, though. It's not the original mom, but just relax and put the candles on. Pour yourself some bubbly and just enjoy this Valentine's Day with your significant other or others.
I hate this character, by the way.
This is not a character.
I choose
Jack.
Miles. I'm on board.
Jack,
I'm on board
this
with
is
that.
Me, baby. Yeah, yeah. You know,
that's why I hate it. It
just shows you there's someone for everyone.
This is me off mic all the time, which y'all don't really know. But anyway, thank you so much.
This is how Miles Walker talks around the office. Rate and review the show also. That would be great while you're listening.
While you're listening.
Miles' smooth jam. And
unless you want to review it poorly, then stay away.
Stay away. Go do something else. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you then. Bye.